Welcome back to a exciting episode on the Wise Wealth podcast. And today we've got an exciting topic to be talking about. We're going to be talking about gold and gold prices, with gold hitting $2,400 on the day. Pretty crazy to see these numbers. So I thought nothing better than bringing our expert onto the podcast. And today we've got Adrian Ash. He's the Director of Research at Bullion Vault. And Bullion Vault, for those that may not know him, is the world's largest online marketplace for gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. So we're going to be breaking down and sort of going through why is gold like this, and sort of some of the traits that I've never seen in my 10 plus years of trading, movements like this, and more importantly, maybe the fundamentals behind that or why gold has moved like this. So thanks so much for joining me, Adrian. It's awesome to have you here. I suppose for everybody that's just tuning in, could you give them a bit of a background about yourself and maybe about Bullion Vault as well?
Sure. Thanks very much, Samuel. It's interesting you say you've never seen gold moving like this in 10 years. I haven't seen gold moving like this in 25 years in the market. I started in finance many, many years ago as an analyst and a publisher and an editor on financial tip sheets, Fleet Street publications, you might remember, Fleet Street Letter, Red Hot Penny Shares. So particularly during the top of the dot-com boom, things were going great for our tech stock newsletters and so on. I then inherited a couple of those just as the 2000s began, which was not a good time to be trying to promote and analyze tech stocks because nobody was interested. And at the same time, you may recall, you might have been in short trousers, Samuel, I don't know, but Gordon Brown was famously selling half of the UK's gold reserves at that time. Now, the founder and now chairman of Bullion Vault, Paul Terstane, he was a stockbroker in a previous life who's actually involved in back office settlement. So settling trades, knowing when things are actually done, was Paul's stock in trade. He'd also put himself through evening school for a degree in computer engineering. So Paul was a software specialist going through the Big Bang in the 80s and 90s, had a very successful business. And he was exiting that business in the late 90s and wondering where to park the cash. And didn't like the stock market. He'd been a stockbroker. He didn't like tech stocks, because he knew about the tech industry and where it was at the time. Didn't know where to park it. Gordon Brown was selling gold, and that was literally Paul's introduction to thinking about gold. Because if the government was selling it, it had to be the wrong price, because governments always get this stuff wrong. So Paul began to investigate the gold market as a private investor. Tried to buy through a private bank. I know that was your background. I don't think it was your private bank that he used. Discovered he didn't own anything in the vault. The private bank, Swiss bank, actually owed him gold.
Wow.
Which was a very common thing 20 years ago for Swiss private banks to say, yeah, we got gold in a vault and you can buy it. But you didn't own it. You were a creditor, unsecured creditor, and you would have had to queue up in the event that the bank failed. But of course, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, nobody thought banks would fail. So this wouldn't be a problem, right? Paul, being Paul, thought, no, this is a problem. I want to own the gold. Asked how much it would cost for him to own the gold. Multiples higher in storage charges, transaction fees. Paul said, there's got to be a simpler way. Paul began to investigate the London gold market. Now, very few people actually are aware of this, but London is the center of the world's physical bullion trade, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. Has been historically for 300 years. It's in the right time zone. It's got Heathrow, you know, as a terminal airport. It's got the expertise. It's got the history. And it's got the vaulting facilities, which are very important. Bank of England in particular. I mean, the Bank of England is effectively a commercial vault for other central banks to store gold in the world's deepest, most liquid gold market. Paul starts to meet people, starts to discover that actually there is another way. You can just get a storage contract with a big vault operator. Very secure vaults. These are, you know, the vaults of popular imagination and the large bars of popular imagination. James Bond, Italian job, right? Yeah. 400 ounces, 12 and a half kilos, known as good delivery bars. Good delivery because delivery is good when you deliver one of these bars, because they're made by a small group of refiners who are approved by the London Bullion Market Association, which is the international trade body. We are members. And as long as the refiner maintains that status, there are spot checks, there are obviously due diligence on its supply chain, etc., as well as the quality of the material, then those bars circulate within the recognized storage facilities as good. You don't need an assayer on the door to check the quality of gold every time it comes in and out. Okay.
Yeah.
And that really reduces your friction and your costs dramatically compared to the traditional retail investor way of buying coin or small bars. If you think about gold coins, I mean, if you look at sovereigns and Britannias, you're going to be facing dealing spreads of 10 to 15%. Now, this is not an investment, frankly. You know, this is uninvestable with those kind of spreads. When you're looking at the wholesale market, large bar gold, this is the form in which all other gold products come from. You take a large bar, you melt it down, you turn it into coin. You take a large bar, you melt it down, you turn it into jewelry, bonding wire for your iPhone, whatever it might be. So this is not only the cheapest gold, but also the most expensive when you come to sell. The trading spread is the narrowest because to get it back into the wholesale market, which is the deepest, most liquid form of gold you can wish for, one of the deepest, most liquid markets, full stop, second really only to US treasuries and the US stock market globally. That's, you know, it's very low cost for you to trade in those large bars. So Paul basically built the platform. He built Bullion Vault to satisfy his own ambitions as a private investor wanting to own gold in a vault, does what it says on the tin. Yeah. He wants to trade, and he wants to trade in open competition with other customers. So we're a peer-to-peer platform where you can trade gold and silver. You can set your own price. There's no credit, no lending. You're not exposed to our balance sheet. We're not exposed to your balance sheet. Okay, so it is physical goods already vaulted that you can buy and sell in open competition for instant settlement. So if you think of our business's growth, I joined in 2000, the business opened in 2005, I joined in 2006. I've been writing about gold and investing in gold myself for about 5 years by this point. Things really took off 2007, Northern Rock. Yeah. Really accelerated in 2008, Lehman Brothers.
Yeah.
All through the financial crisis. Again, then through the Brexit referendum and what that did to sterling, of course. And then particularly during COVID, March 2020, we had record quantities of gold being bought by customers, record numbers of new users. Our typical customer is about £10,000 sterling. That's the median holding. Talking to customers over the years and also a couple of surveys that we do every so often, that accounts for maybe 10, 15% of their self-invested wealth. So it's excluding their home, excluding maybe pension products that they have through work or whatever. So, you know, it's, I think the idea of the gold bug, the dreaded gold bug, right? That people who invest in gold are all banking on the end of the world and they're doomers, et cetera, is really, really mistaken. If you think of Bullion Vault customers, they're gold and silver investors. Yeah, sure. But actually 90% of their money is in other stuff.
So what they actually are
is investors
who
happen to have some gold and silver. Now, why would you do that? Well, the bottom line with gold, and I think for the vast majority of Bullion Vault customers and for gold investors generally, it's seen as a form of insurance. It's investment insurance because gold does tend to do well when other stuff does badly. Look at the financial crisis. Look at the COVID crash in spring 2020. Gold also tends to do well historically. The weird thing about gold, and this is where the vast majority of our customers are self-directed, and they're self-directed, Samuel, by definition, because your financial advisor will very rarely tell you to buy gold. Okay. Yeah. In my experience, I've met two, I think, in my whole career who said, yeah, I might think about it, for the very simple reason that gold pays you no interest. There's no income, there's no dividend, there's no yield.
Yeah.
Okay. So it just doesn't compute for a lot of IFAs. Their advisory model, their portfolios, it just doesn't fit because this thing doesn't pay you anything.
Yeah.
But of course, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying that, you know, you rightly touched on that, you know, gold usually does good when other things are bad. And, you know, that would make sense through the crash period. That would make sense during COVID and all of those concerns. That was a big period for me in trading. I was trading oil going negative. That was pretty
That was good fun, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good bit of fun.
That was interesting with gold, of course, is gold, you know, oil went negative during the COVID because it's useful.
Yeah.
Gold is useless. Gold was the perfect asset for the COVID crisis because gold, I mean, 10% maybe of annual gold demand goes to industrial use.
Yeah.
90% of it is for owning it. Gold's value is in owning it. And people say, oh, gold's got no economic value. Well, no, it has. It's just not industrial. It's social. Gold, Warren Buffett famously has said, you know, gold's got no intrinsic worth. It's like, well, okay, how are you figuring what intrinsic worth means? Mm. It's been money and it's been a store of value in all cultures, in all ages throughout history.
Yeah.
And if you're going to take the humans out of this, Buffett famously said, if a Martian looked down, they'd say these people dig it up from one place and bury it in a hole somewhere else. The Martian would be really confused. Yeah, sure. But that's a Martian, not a human.
Yeah.
human would say, oh my God, it's gold. Isn't it beautiful? It's amazing, right? And that's what humanity has always done. It's imbued gold with this huge value. But yeah, I mean, that was crazy, right? Oil went negative because it's useful. Gold went through the roof. But of course, gold went through the roof because interest rates at the same time were collapsing. Because gold pays you no interest, you're not reliant on anybody else's promises. And that's the other thing with gold as a safe haven, is unlike any other easily tradable asset you can think of, gold doesn't rely on anybody else's promises. Gold is just gold, right? Because it doesn't pay you an income, you're not waiting on somebody else to have a quarterly earnings report or whatever it might be. And that's why it's so weird at the moment. Interest rates in the bond market are actually going up.
Yeah.
There is no financial crisis right now. The stock market is actually at all-time highs.
Yeah.
And yet here we are with gold going absolutely nuts day after day after day. We had a record run of new record highs, 8 days in a trot in London, which ended on Wednesday. Okay. We've never had 8 days of new record highs before. Interest rates are up. The stock market's up. So a lot of people are scratching their heads.
And I that's why you're here. I'm scratching my head because when I look at this, well, I think let's dig into a little bit later of what we think of why it's got here. Mm-hmm. The situation that we're in now, I'm talking to a lot of different traders and investors, and I think arguably what we have seen now in, for example, let's take the S&P all-time highs and sitting at those levels, we're in an election year of which is arguably going to be very controversial no matter how way you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is going to add volatility into the stock market. Now, arguably, we should now be seeing a pullback in indices. We should be seeing it, and we will see it in the next, whether it's now, whether it's in the next 3 months, we will see it in the run-up to the elections. This will not just be a bull run in the equities market going up, 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 and up. Now, usually, when this happens and when an index sells off, investors goes from equities to commodities and will go and invest in gold. Gold is at 2,400. What do investors do now? Because I'm sitting here going, gold's going to go higher when this happens. Do you agree with that? Or am I wrong in this?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really, really weird because the assumption, and as I say, 25 years in the market myself, and you know, if you look at 25 years before that, since gold was released from its dollar peg when Richard Nixon cut the dollar free from gold, or gold versus gold free from the dollar, depending on how you look at it, back in 1971. You know, gold goes up when things go bad. Now, it's interesting what you say about the US election, of course, is because back in 2016, the Brexit referendum, which came as a real shock to the financial markets, it may not have shocked a lot of people in Britain, about just over half of them, or about one third of the electorate. It didn't shock them. But it really shocked the markets. I mean, gold in sterling went up 22% in 6 hours.
Yeah.
From the first result coming through at midnight through to 6 a.m. in the morning, we did £30 million worth of business on bullion vault because we're open 24/7. So you can trade gold throughout, you know, whatever time of day. You can't do ETFs at that time of day. You certainly can't do coins and bars, right? Because your dealer's shut. Going into the US election in November, the world assumed of Trump victory was going to be a disaster for the stock market and gold was going to go crazy. And gold did pop on the day of that result when Trump beat Clinton. Gold did pop, but it failed at what was then a downtrend coming off the big top from 2011. And then it went down. And everybody said, how can gold be going down? Trump has won the election. This is a disaster. And then the stock market was going up. And everyone said, how can the stock market be going up? This is a disaster. Trump's won the election. You know, financial markets don't work how everybody assumes they will do at those kind of critical moments. And something's happening in gold, which exactly as you say, right? Where do investors go when things go bad from here? Well, I would normally say, well, yeah, I would expect gold to do well. But I can't promise you that. And I certainly can't promise you that given that gold's been doing so well at the same time as the US economy's been doing pretty well, right? Again, you look at the interest rate thing, and this is really, you look at a lot of commentary, Bloomberg, Reuters, a lot of pundits, a lot of analysts, you know, they say gold tends to move inverse to interest rates. And that makes sense, right? Gold, at the end of the day, is indestructible cash that doesn't pay you anything.
Yeah.
Right? There's no income on this. So instead of credit risk, you've got price risk, which is very different to a bond. very different to cash in the bank even. Okay, so but that's essentially, you know, the comparison to look at. So when interest rates on cash go down, gold starts to appeal more.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're losing less by not having cash in the bank instead. Similarly, when interest rates go up, well, gold looks less appealing then, because I can, and certainly, I mean, what we've seen on Bullion Vault, and this is true across Western financial markets for gold, you have seen investors in the last 6-12 months now taking a little profit on some portion of their gold holdings and putting the cash in the bank. And why not? Look at Germany. Germany had negative interest rates from the ECB. It was cheaper to own gold on Bullion Vault than it was to put cash in the bank. Okay, with the storage charge on Bullion Vault, it was cheaper to an investor than it was to hold cash in the bank. It was a no-brainer to buy gold if you were a German saver, a private investor. That changed when the ECB finally got above zero and then went positive on its interest rates. And the German coin and bar market, which had been a phenomenon for 10 years, collapsed at the start of 2023, vanished. Okay, and people are still scratching their heads. Where's all the buyers gone? Well, they were buying gold because cash was a terrible alternative. Cash is now a better alternative. The DAX has come roaring back as well. We've had record highs in the DAX recently. And I've got a huge profit on gold if I bought it 5-10 years ago. I mean, the gold price in euros has doubled as it has in sterling in the last 5-6 years. So why wouldn't you take a profit? Because cash interest rates have gone up. So you've got this big weight of gold coming out of Western hands at the moment. ETFs as well, Western ETFs, huge outflows of gold now, running on pretty much since, well, really starting October 2020 was the peak. Huge inflows of gold during the COVID crisis, the first wave. Then they drifted out. Then money went back in around the Russian invasion, the all-out invasion of Ukraine, came back out a bit. And then a little bit went back in last year on the mini crisis in US regional banking, Silicon Valley Bank, etc. Yeah. But effectively, ETFs have been shrinking now for well over 2 years. That's money coming out from fund managers as well as retail investors, ETF shareholders, etc. So who's buying gold? The other critical thing as well with the rising interest rates, because what we've seen over the last, well, what are we going to say here? You're going to be better on this than me, I hope, Samuel. Last couple of weeks is that Fed interest rate expectations have really turned around.
Yeah.
Fed was going to, I mean, the Fed was going to cut in March.
Yeah. Nope.
We're already in April. The Fed now looks like it's not going to cut in June. That's the way the market is now betting. By the end of 2024, the market thought at New Year that we would get 6 rate cuts this year.
Yeah.
It now thinks we're going to get 2.
Yeah.
And Fed officials like Neil Kashkari are saying you might not get any.
Yeah.
Now, this should be dreadful for the gold price. This, if the world works the way it always has, this should be utterly dreadful for the gold price. But no, on the contrary, gold is up, well, $300 in the last month.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't compute given the way that the world has always worked. So you're left with this big question of, okay, I think coming back to your question about, you know, what do investors do when the stock market does go south? It's going to be really interesting. Will Western investors, will Western fund managers, real money accounts, institutional investors, will they turn to gold as a hedge? Now, just as a quick aside on that, when's the best time to buy your insurance? It's not when your house is on fire, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to buy it in advance. Okay. So the time to buy gold is when it's quiet and when it's not making headlines. That's problematic now because gold isn't quiet and it is making headlines and it is at record highs. So it's becoming very difficult to say, I'm going to buy some gold as a hedge right now.
Yeah, because theoretically, when you look at it from an investment side of view, you're going to have the indexes drop off. They're going to start selling off. Even though interest rates are holding, there is this whole, you know, we are at what we call peak. So theoretically, the interest rates should start dropping no matter what. They're not going to go up from here. They're holding. Everyone's holding. So interest rates.
Kashkari said the other day, maybe they might go up.
Yeah, I just don't see that.
I agree. I mean, he said, I don't expect it to happen, but he actually did use the words might go up, which, you know, it's like, but it shows you the turnaround on what people were expecting 2-3 minutes ago.
For sure. And so if interest rates come down, then gold becomes more attractive. If the indexes come down, gold becomes more attractive. But does it become more attractive at all-time highs? And that's a situation I've never seen, because usually that conversation is happening when, you know, gold is low, or it's in a choppy sort of market. We're not near lows, we're not near all-time highs. And overall, you go, there's more room in this to go to the upside if those markets are coming down. Whereas at this point, we're going, we're at 2.4. If the S&P does actually make a retreat on that side, what could gold actually look like? Is this going to be, you know, there was that whole conversation about Bitcoin's the new gold, and we briefly joked about before about saying, you know, gold is literally moving how Bitcoin once was.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, even bigger days, new all-time highs and so on and so forth. Are we, is there a chance that we could see gold carry on that movement if that environment is to happen in the US markets?
And so what have we got? We've got 5 months now until the US election really is at its, you know, its most frenzied, because it is. I mean, the campaign is going to be, you know, really divisive, and, you know, the political risk around November is huge.
Yeah.
And you'd think gold would make a great trade, and it is making a great trade. But look, I think we have to look at who's doing the buying and who's not. Everybody knows it's not Western investors who are buying at the moment. We're seeing actually relatively good demand on Bullion Vault right now, and relatively good new interest, new number of new customers. It's just that existing customers are selling that much more because they're taking profit at what are remarkable prices in such a short space of time. Where's the pressure coming from? It's not coming from Western investors. Is it coming from Western speculators, COMEX, futures and options? Yeah, to some extent, but it's not overextended. I mean, the net speculative long position of hedge funds and so on in Western gold derivatives is just not overexcited at all. In a word, it's China. I mean, that's the bottom line here.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got some COMEX speculation. Yes, you've got, you know, clearly there's some options activity in the London market. I think there's also going to be a lot of, you know, bullion banks are going to be having to hold more gold themselves to cover their exposure to some of the derivatives contracts they've got against clients. But the bottom line is China. China, I saw an interview the other day on Bloomberg. Friend of mine, James Steele from HSBC, did a fantastic job of explaining to Bloomberg why China matters so much to the gold market. But the anchor man was like, yeah, and how do they buy gold in China? I mean, what do? Do they like buy bits of jewelry or old coins? What is it they're buying? This is so arrogant and rude. Okay. Yeah. China is 1/6 of the world population. It is the number two economy. It's a number one on a purchasing parity basis. It's been the world's number one gold mining producer for almost 20 years. It's the number one importing nation. It's the number one central bank gold buying nation. It's the number one gold consumer nation. If you want a range of ways to buy gold, other than Bullion Vault, which is obviously the best in the world, you will not do better than in China. Okay. I mean, they are phenomenally well served. Banking products, jewelry stores, where you're paying by weight rather than, you know, it's literally really competitive stuff. Very, very tight spreads for retail bullion products compared to what we pay in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, really massively developed, sophisticated gold market. And it's got the bit between its teeth. And that started about 12 months ago. Chinese stock market has now gone down for 3 years. It's had something of a rally so far in 24. But the stock market sucks, basically, in China. Real estate is a disaster. And it's a rolling catastrophe. That means interest rates on cash in the bank are still very, very poor in China. And of course, you can't get your money out. It's almost impossible for an ordinary individual in China to get exposure to foreign assets. That leaves gold, for which China already has a huge cultural affinity.
Yeah.
And so money is literally pouring into gold bullion in the private sector. Excuse me. At the same time as the Chinese central bank is buying gold, seemingly at any price, they're buying relentlessly every month. Now, this is not how central banks tend to behave either. They tend to back off when the price goes up and they tend to buy the dips. China did ease off a little bit in March, but it still bought 5 tons of gold at what were then record high prices. You know, it's just buying gold with both hands, effectively. And on top of all of that, sorry, Sam, I was just going to say that on top of all of that, you've now got real hot money speculation in Shanghai. The Shanghai futures market has really gone crazy. And the kicker on that is silver. Silver is now trading at a $3 premium per ounce in Shanghai to the London price. Okay. It's literally gone crazy. And it's that wall of speculative money coming on top of the retail demand, on top of the private banking demand in China. I mean, this is, you know, part of the missing puzzle. People look at coins and small bars and they say, oh, you know, but who's eating all this ETF gold coming out of the West, I would guess very happily, very confidently, it's Chinese private banking, right? It's wealth management products in China. Because if you've got a bull market mania for gold in China amongst households, you most certainly are going to have it in private banking and wealth management products. Because there's nowhere else to put your money right now, right?
Yeah.
And then alongside that, plus the speculation, you've got the central bank consistently buying gold. And this is, as I say, it's the world's largest gold market. It's the world's largest gold producer. So the head scratching that I think has been going on around gold over the last couple of weeks, I think we're kind of missing the point. I think something has changed dramatically. China has been, you know, a huge price taker for many years in gold. But this is certainly the first time in my experience, and I think pretty much in modern history, that Chinese activity in the gold market has actually driven the price up like this. But that's what's going on. That's what's going on.
Yeah. And hopefully more people actually start talking about the China side of things. And the reason how it sort of came to my attention was when we started to look and explore at the Chinese stock market. And rightfully so, you said that it's pretty much been, it hit its all-time highs. It hit its highs in 2021, which was something like, it was around 18,000, and it's now down at 11,900. Now, the only thing that really correlates with that massive drop, which is really interesting within Asia and China, is the overall sales of offices. I've got it here. The overall sales of offices, factories, stores, hotels and apartments, senior housing and other commercial properties in China totaled 60.3 billion in 2021. Now, if you then go to where we are now, China totaled 38.6 billion last year. So nearly half of what they're looking at. And that's where it comes down to the commercial side of this within the, it's almost like it is a housing bubble, clearly, a commercial property bubble that they're experiencing in China. And no one's really talking too much about that. We obviously had a little bit about it a year ago or so, didn't we?
But that, yeah, because if you remember a year ago, there was lots of chatter, you know, headlines in the FT and The Economist, is this China's Lehman's moment, right? Because you had Evergrande went bust, Country Garden, and people were saying, oh, is this a Lehman's moment now? Is everything going to collapse? And the consensus amongst people who understand that kind of stuff from a regulatory macro point of view was no, because Beijing will never allow that to happen. And actually, systemically, the economy isn't, you know, that reliant on real estate and so on. That may be. Certainly, the stock market has been a disaster. It's almost halved, right? And commercial real estate sales, as you say, the value of those is almost halved. So it's pretty gruesome. But whether or not it's been a Lehman's moment in terms of an unconstrained collapse, I think it's really been a Lehman's moment culturally. And I think that, again, if you throw that onto China's existing affinity for gold anyway, I think that's really helped drive this big move of household wealth, household savings into gold. Because, you know, we get the occasional headline coming out of China. You know, we imagine there's some kind of censorship that stops people understanding what's going on. It's just not true. Weibo, all of that, they got social media apps. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, they're, and so when you had those stories from last year, there were queues of people outside real estate development company doors demanding their money back, right? I mean, this is going to be all over. So it's exactly that kind of Lehman's moment, or even Northern Rock, I suppose, maybe is a better example in the UK, right? Of people seeing panic, people seeing, you know, oh, there's a crash. Yeah. And the authorities aren't in control. They can't stop this. That was what Western pundits said. Oh, no, Beijing won't allow this to become an uncontrolled crisis. But that's how it certainly seems to have felt, I think, to a lot of Chinese households over the last 12, 18 months. And again, that safe haven appeal for gold will only have grown stronger on that. Now it seems to have really got the bit between its teeth and become a momentum trade as well. So I suppose looking forwards, our question, what happens to gold if when Western stock markets turn south? Well, if there is, I'm going to say when there is, not if, when there's a turnaround in Western investment demand for gold, what happens to the price then? Well, it's very difficult to see the price not responding very aggressively, to be honest. Because if we see the kind of panic that we saw February, March 2020, If you look initially, yeah, gold fell. Everything fell initially in that slump. All correlations went to one, of course. But gold stopped falling very quickly. It fell a lot less than everything else, and then it shot higher. And I think if we were to get some kind of panic moment in the broader financial markets, then I would expect that to be repeated, frankly, and for gold to become a momentum trade, but with physical strong investment demand coming through as well. The fact is, you know, if you look at bullion vault customers, those people who are currently taking a bit of profit, there might be. I mean, our customers over the last 6 months have now sold about 6% of their holding by weight. Okay. We had record high holdings back in August 2023. They've sold about 6% by weight of that now. The value of those holdings that they've still got has gone up by 9%.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is not a rush for the doors by any stretch. This is sensible portfolio management, frankly. People are taking a profit.
Yeah.
But they're only taking a little bit off it. You know, so client holdings today are worth about $3.3 billion in gold and about another $1 billion in silver today. The silver has also gone crazy. We should note that. Those people who have sold and taken a profit, it has worked for them.
Yeah.
That's the other thing for gold. People often look at gold and go, oh, you know, it's a little bit edgy. It's a little bit crazy to do this. It's not something my financial advisor recommends I do. But the fact is, gold has worked.
Yeah.
It has. Private investors. It's done its job. Today, it's offering you a profit without a crisis. Well, where's it going to be with a crisis, right?
Well, that's sort of like my thought process as well, because obviously if Trump does get back in, he also said that Ukraine and Russia ends in one day. And from my opinion, that means that he's going to stop funding Ukraine, which means they've got to sit down and actually make that decision of whether or not they give up land or whatnot. So you're going to have that whole volatility in that sense of disruption with Ukraine and Russia.
But what does that mean for China, right? Because I think if you look at, you know, I think what really, personally, I think what really triggered Putin's decision to go into Ukraine was the US Western withdrawal from Afghanistan, because it was a shambles, right? And the kind of loss of US dominance and the kind of loss of, you know, US imperial power, if you like, was really demonstrated by that. So Putin goes into Ukraine. What happens when, if Putin gets a big chunk of Ukraine because Trump has handed it to him? What does China do?
Yeah, goes for Taiwan.
Goes for Taiwan. Now, there is unfortunately, you know, the China story does have an unpleasant edge to it, which is central bank gold hoarding, because central banks have been the big marginal buyers over the last 5 years now. Putting aside the inflows that we saw during the COVID crisis from private capital, really, central banks have been the big story. But it's emerging market central banks, not Western central banks. They were already massively overweight gold, even the UK still. And emerging market central banks in particular, who are either sanctioned or potentially at risk of being sanctioned by the West. And if you look at the example of Russia, and then you look at when emerging market central bank really started to kick up in the absence of Western private sector demand, it's about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And I think China, the People's Bank, Beijing, basically has decided we're going to need a lot more gold to give ourselves the ability to ride out sanctions, being locked out of SWIFT, as Russia has been. It's not necessarily just about de-dollarization. It's not just about, you know, trying to get away from exposure to US asset prices. I think it's about having independence of action.
That's very interesting. So you almost are saying that China's looked at what's happened to Russia through the Ukraine-Russia invasion and are saying that, well, if we're to be sanctioned, we need to pull ourselves away from that. And you think that they're basically buying up more gold in that case that they ever did have increased sanctions on them?
I went to a very interesting conference a couple of weeks ago. It was a sustainability summit from the London Bullion Market Association. And a lot of it was about ESG, because environmental, social, governance concerns are a big issue in the gold market, and LBMA has been very strong in taking the lead on that and improving standards and stronger due diligence on supply chains, etc. There was a really interesting session about bad guys, really interesting session about baddies in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa in particular, and Latin America, and the fact that there are state actors working with local criminal and warlord gangs, both to finance and then to buy and then to transport gold, particularly gold concentrate, and to take it home. we've all heard of the Wagner Group, the Russian private army. Well, there's many hundreds of those, and they're very busy across Africa. They're very busy across Latin America in looking to acquire gold in particular. Now, they might work alongside drug trafficking gangs as well, but they're looking to acquire gold and to acquire it by any means, frankly. I mean, these are really bad people. And it's quite a scary picture when you think about, well, what's the motivation for doing this? As a private investor, you can look at gold and say, okay, well, gold gets me out of jail when other things do badly. And at the moment, gold is making a great momentum trade. Great. But if you look at it from a sovereign actor's point of view, from a sovereign state's point of view, what is gold really about in the end? It's about, in extremis, Alan Greenspan, former US Federal Reserve chairman, said this, in extremis, gold is money.
Yeah.
Okay. And he gave the example of Nazi Germany trying to seize all the gold it could as it started marauding across Europe. And it's not a happy world when central banks are actively buying and acquiring gold to keep at home because they mistrust other governments so badly. So I think in terms of the central bank bid for gold, it's not inexhaustible. I mean, I can only imagine there's lots of central bank reserve managers looking at the price today and saying, well, maybe this month's program, maybe we won't buy quite so much, right? But short of peace and trust breaking out between the West and the rest, I don't see that bid going away anytime soon.
So if you was to sit here and go, where do you think gold's going to finish at the end of the year?
Yes. Not what I do. No, because we're a trading exchange, so it wouldn't be fair for me, and I'd be wrong anyway, so it would just be embarrassing. But we do ask our customers, and we ask them in December, for our New Year survey, New Year 24 survey, we said, where do you think the gold price of gold will be at the end of the year? And the weighted answer that came back was 2342.
Wow.
Now, so, at the time, that looked like a big reach, okay?
Yeah,
that was way ahead of what bullion market analysts were predicting. But I checked it. I mean, it wasn't excessive. That kind of year-on-year gain from where we had ended 2023 wouldn't have been out of court at all. But it looked like a big reach. We've already done it. And we've done it with another, $60 on top. I think disappointment with the Fed not cutting rates surely is going to kick in at some point, right? I mean, it's at some point this move has to roll over. The speculative frenzy has to, eat itself as they always do. It's no sign of backing off yet. And the size of this move, to be honest, Samuel, is not unprecedented. You know, gold's up, 30% in 6 months? Well, so what? You know, that's not uncommon for gold at all, or any asset class, really. Yeah. What is unprecedented is the strength of it, just the resilience of it. We had a run of 8 new records in 8 days ending this week. We've had more records since then. We took Wednesday off and that was it. Yesterday was a new record. Today will be a new record. We had 6 new records as a run just a month ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's this relentlessness, which I think is really remarkable. And the bid that's coming through just isn't backing off. And at the moment, the bid is notably absent in Western investment markets, private investment markets. It is pretty much, I think, being driven by China, which we have to remember is not, it's not like saying, oh, it's only China. It's a sixth of the world population. It's the world's most largest economy on a purchasing parity basis. You know, it's China. Yeah, sure. I don't see the bid from central banks backing off. And as I say, disappointment with the Fed not cutting rates should hurt the price.
Yeah.
But that's how the world used to work. And I don't know if it's not how the world's working right now. Really isn't. Really, really isn't. So something has changed in the gold market. I think, we've got a new, I don't know if it's normal yet. I suppose that's the thing. Something has changed. We don't know if it's established as a new normal. But, these higher levels, last year everyone was saying, where's the floor? 1800? Oh, maybe it's 19. Maybe it's 2000. We're $400 higher from there now.
And I don't think
where is the floor, right?
I don't think it'd be unrealistic as well for people to say that 2.5 is well within reach now as well.
I mean, considering that we've come up $100, I mean, what? We got through a 22 handle in 2 days.
Yeah.
Right? Bang. Gone. So, absolutely, 25 is perfectly within reach. I notice that bank analysts are now rushing to revise their forecasts for the year because they just got blown out. They got blown away.
I don't think anyone could have really predicted that. I think that's the problem when it starts coming down to taking into account, like, you know, China and that side of things. It's very much always focused on, like you're rightly saying, like the West and that side of things. So to that in, you know, and the argument here is that I don't actually think that this will slow down in China. I suppose my only question that I've got that I think will never be able to be answered is why did the demand in China kick up massively over sort of the last sort of 3 or 4 months when arguably they haven't really had a break since the 2020. They had obviously COVID, then they had the 2021 highs, and then they've had this whole commercial issue for pretty much the next 3 years. Why over the last 3 or 4 months that's become such a big factor? And maybe something is happening within China that we're not necessarily seeing yet, and that they know more of there. I don't know. It'd be more interesting now if you see a month come out and say there's pretty much they admit there's a commercial markets crash or whatever, and it would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really it is a really good question. Is, you know, well, why now? Considering that the stock market was going down for 3 years. In fact, the stock market's turned higher since January. I think, you know, it went down for 3 years and then it kind of found a floor. So why now? In terms of the private sector demand for gold and its impact on the global price, because it's important with China to remember that China is actually a dead end for gold. You can import it, but you need a license to do that from the People's Bank. You can't export bullion. Same is true in India. You cannot. It's a dead end for gold. It's the exact opposite of London. Right, London is literally Heathrow for gold. It comes in, it goes straight out again. Thank you very much. It can sit here, you know, in departures, in, you know, in transit, waiting for a flight on. But that's kind of what London is for. Last summer, the People's Bank put its foot on the pipeline of new import licenses. They were clearly anxious about the drop in the yuan on the currency market, and obviously imports of gold necessarily weigh on your current account deficit because you've got to send dollars abroad.
Yeah,
at least money in some form or the other to get that gold in. So they actually started clamping down on that. What that did was that drove the premium, the gap between Shanghai and London prices, sharply higher, ran up to record highs over the summer, even though there were no imports effectively, right? So they had this huge incentive for new imports, but you couldn't get the licenses because the People's Bank weren't releasing them. And what that really proved was that there was a strong demand domestically, right? Wasn't being satisfied. And I think that might have actually kind of become a bit self-fulfilling. People saw domestic Chinese prices going higher, heard that you couldn't get more imported, and thought, well, I better get some now whilst I can.
Yeah.
And away you go. And I think that possibly was a kind of trigger in a way for this to become self-fulfilling starting last summer. Where it stops, I don't know. I mean, at some point, any retail investment bull market like this, well, it's not retail only, right? I mean, it's there's most definitely managed wealth is going in here as well. At some point, it rolls over. But if you look at the West's financial crisis bull market, it kind of ran from 2007 through 2012.
Yeah.
We might be 12 months into this for China.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it could have a lot more legs on it than what we've sort of anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to set up another podcast if we hit 3,000.
Yeah, we'll book it. Yeah, let's say three. It's not 3.5, maybe, because, you know, I've got things to do next week. So
yeah. You might find people start profit taking on Bitcoin and moving them into gold.
Well, I mean, if you're looking for a momentum trade, I mean, it's, you know, clearly at the moment, you know, gold has really got the bit between its teeth. Silver as well. Silver has really gone. And I think, you know, if people are looking for, you know, a hot move, silver's possibly made it, certainly making it. I mean, that's the problem. We, you know, when silver starts making headlines, which it may well do at this kind of price and at this speed, you know, you've got to beware of, you should have bought it at 23. And it's now knocking, well, it's gone through 29 today. It's put on like $7 in the last 6 weeks. I mean, it's really, really moved. But again, looking at the data this morning, Shanghai Futures Exchange, the volume has been phenomenal.
We'll have to keep tabs on it and see where it's going to end. Honestly, thank you so much for your time, Major, and it's been really appreciated.
It's been really good fun. Thanks very much, Samuel. Look forward to doing it again soon. So yeah, let's say at 3,000, yeah?
Yeah, 3,000. I'll put it in the diary and off we go. Thanks again.
Okay. Cheers. You take care.